Saturday Night Theatre. We present An Ideal Husband by Oscar Wilde. First produced at the Theatre Royal Haymarket in 1895. In this production, the part of Sir Robert Chiltern is played by Noel Johnson, Lady Chiltern by Jane Wenham, Lord Goring by Ronald Lewis, and Mrs. Cheveley by Rosemary Martin. The play opens in the Octagon Room at Sir Robert Chiltern's house in Grosvenor Square.
Sir Charles and Lady Grendon, Lady Gordon and Miss Gordon, Lord Adamford, Mrs. Lavery and Miss Lavery, Sir John and Lady Fitzmaurice.
Going on to the Hartlocks tonight, Margaret?
I suppose so. Are you?
Yes. Horribly tedious parties they give, don't they?
Horribly tedious. And never know why I go. Never know why I go anywhere.
I come here to be educated.
Oh, I hate being educated.
So do I. It puts one almost on a level with the commercial classes, doesn't it? Dear Gertrude Chiltern is always telling me that I should have some serious purpose in life. If I come here to try to find one.
Mr. and Lady Jane Barford.
I am so glad you could come.
Lord Cavershaw.
Good evening, Lady Chiltern.
Ah, Lord Cavershaw.
Has my good-for-nothing young son been here?
I don't think Lord Goring has arrived yet.
Why do you call Lord Goring good-for-nothing, Lord Cavershaw?
Because he leads such an idle life, Miss Chiltern.
How can you say such a thing? Why, he rides in the Row at 10 o'clock in the morning, goes to the opera 3 times a week, changes his clothes at least 5 times a day, and dines out every night of the season. You don't call that leading an idle life, do you?
You are a very charming young lady.
How sweet of you to say that, Lord Cavershaw. Do come to us more often.
Never go anywhere now. Sick of London society. Shouldn't mind being introduced to my own tailor. He always votes on the right side, but objects strongly to being sent down for dinner with my wife's milliner. Never could stand Lady Caverson's bonnets.
Oh, I love London society. I think it is immensely improved. It is entirely composed now of beautiful idiots and brilliant lunatics. Just what society should be.
Which is Goring? Beautiful idiot or the other thing?
I have been obliged for the present to put Lord Goring into a class quite by himself. But he is developing charmingly.
Into what?
I hope to let you know very soon, Lord Caverson.
Oh!
Lady Markby, Mrs. Cheveley.
Good evening, dear Gertrude. So kind of you to let me bring my friend, Mrs. Cheveley. Two such charming women should know each other.
I am delighted. I think that Mrs. Cheveley and I have met before. I did not know she had married a second time.
Oh, nowadays people marry as often as they can, don't they? It is most fashionable.
Good evening, Lady Markby.
Oh, dear Duchess. And how is the Duke? Brain still weak, I suppose?
I'm afraid so.
Well, that is only to be expected, is it not? His good father was just the same. There's nothing like race, is there?
But have we really met before, Lady Chiltern? I don't remember where. I have been out of England for so long.
We were at school together, Mrs. Cheveley.
Indeed. I have forgotten all about my school days. I have a vague impression that they were detestable.
I am not surprised.
Do you know, I am quite looking forward to meeting your clever husband, Lady Chiltern. Since he has been at the Foreign Office, he has been so much talked of in Vienna. They actually succeed in spelling his name right in the newspapers. That in itself is fame on the continent.
I hardly think there will be much in common between you and my husband, Mrs. Chiltern.
Good evening, Lady Markby.
Oh, Sir Robert.
I hope you've brought Sir John with you.
Oh, I have brought a much more charming person than Sir John. Sir John's temper, since he has taken seriously to politics, has become quite unbearable. Really, now that the House of Commons is trying to become useful, it does a great deal of harm.
I hope not, Lady Markby.
But who is the charming person you have been kind enough to bring to us?
Her name is Mrs. Cheeveley. One of the Dorsetshire Cheeveleys, I suppose, but I really don't know. Families are so mixed nowadays. Indeed, as a rule, everybody turns out to be somebody else.
Mrs. Cheeveley. I seem to know the name.
She's just arrived from Vienna, Sir Robert.
Ah, yes, I think I know whom you mean.
Oh, she goes everywhere there and has such pleasant scandals about all her friends. Let me introduce you, my dear. Sir Robert Chiltern is dying to know you.
Everyone is dying to know the brilliant Mrs. Cheeveley.
Thank you, Sir Robert. An acquaintance that begins with a compliment is sure to develop into a real friendship. And I find that I know Lady Chiltern already.
Really?
Yes. She has just reminded me that we were at school together. I remember it perfectly now. She always got the good conduct prize.
And what prizes did you get, Mrs. Cheeveley?
My prizes came a little later on in life. I don't think any of them were for good conduct.
I'm sure they were for something charming. Tell me, what makes you leave your brilliant Vienna for our gloomy London? Or perhaps the question is indiscreet.
The questions are never indiscreet. Answers sometimes are. I wanted to meet you.
Indeed?
It is quite true. I wanted immensely to meet you. And to ask you to do something for me.
Well, I hope it is not a little thing, Mrs. Cheeveley. I find that little things are so very difficult to do.
No, I don't think it is quite a little thing.
I'm so glad. Do tell me what it is.
Later on. And now, may I walk through your beautiful house? I hear your pictures are charming. Poor Baron Arnheim, you remember the Baron, used to tell me you had some wonderful corals.
Did you know Baron Arnheim well?
Intimately. Did you?
At one time.
Wonderful man, wasn't he?
He was very remarkable in many ways.
I often think it's such a pity he never wrote his memoirs. They would have been most interesting.
Lord Goring.
Good evening, my dear Arthur.
Robert. Good evening.
Mrs. Cheeveley, allow me to introduce you to Lord Goring, the idlest man in London.
I have met Lord Goring before.
I did not think you would remember me, Mrs. Cheeveley.
My memory is under admirable control. And are you still a bachelor?
I believe so.
How very romantic.
Oh, I'm not at all romantic. I'm not old enough. I leave romance to my seniors. May I ask, are you staying in London long?
That depends partly on the weather, partly on the cooking, and partly on Sir Robert.
Oh, yes, it's one of those things. Good evening, Miss Mabel.
You are very late, Lord Goring.
Have you missed me?
Awfully.
Then I'm sorry I did not stay away longer. I like being missed.
Oh, very selfish of you.
I am very selfish.
You are always telling me of your bad qualities, Lord Goring.
I have only told you half of them as yet, Miss Mabel.
Are the others very bad?
Quite dreadful. When I think of them at night, I go to sleep at once.
Well, I delight in your bad qualities. I wouldn't have you part with one of them. Aren't you coming to the music room?
Not if there is any music going on, Miss Mabel.
The music is in German. You would not understand.
And are you going to any of our country houses before you leave England, Mrs. Cheeveley?
Oh, no. I can't stand your English house parties. In England, people actually try to be brilliant at breakfast. And that is so dreadful of them. Only dull people are brilliant at breakfast. My stay in England really depends on you, Sir Robert.
Seriously?
Quite seriously. I want to talk to you about the Argentine Canal Company.
What a tedious, practical subject for you to talk about, Mrs. Cheeveley.
Oh, I like tedious, practical subjects. What I don't like are tedious, practical people. There is a wide difference. Besides, you are interested, I know, in international canal schemes. You were Lord Radley's secretary, weren't you, when the government bought the Suez Canal shares?
Yes, but the Suez Canal was a very great and splendid undertaking. This Argentine scheme is a commonplace stock exchange swindle.
A speculation, Sir Robert. A brilliant, daring speculation.
Believe me, Mrs. Cheeveley, it is a swindle. Let us call things by their proper names. I hope you have not invested in it. Oh, I'm sure you are far too clever to have done that.
I have invested very largely in it.
Oh, who could have advised you to do such a foolish thing?
Your old friend and mine.
Who?
Baron Arnheim.
Ah, yes, I remember hearing at the time of his death that he had been mixed up in the whole affair.
It was his last romance. His last but one, to do him justice.
But you have not seen my corots yet. They're in the music room. May I show them to you?
I am not in the mood tonight for silver twilights or rose-pink dawns. I want to talk business.
I fear I have no advice to give you, Mrs. Cheveley, except to interest yourself in something less dangerous. The success of the canal depends, of course, on the attitude of England, and I am going to lay the report of the commissioners before the House tomorrow night.
That you must not do. What? In your own interests, Sir Robert, to say nothing of mine.
In my own interests?
I want you to withdraw the report on the ground that you have reason to believe that the commissioners have been prejudiced or misinformed.
But
then I want you to say a few words to the effect that the government is going to reconsider the question, and that you have reason to believe that the canal, if completed, will be of great international value.
Mrs. Cheveley, you cannot be serious in making me such a proposition.
I am quite serious. And if you do what I ask you, I will pay you very handsomely.
Pay me?
You are a man of the world, and you have your price, I suppose. Everybody has nowadays. The drawback is that most people are so dreadfully expensive. I know I am. I hope you will be more reasonable in your terms.
If you will allow me, I will call your carriage for you. You have lived so long abroad, Mrs. Cheveley, that you seem to be unable to realize that you are talking to an English gentleman.
I realize that I am talking to a man who laid the foundation of his fortune by selling to a stock exchange speculator a cabinet secret.
What do you mean?
I mean that I know the real origin of your wealth and your career, and I have got your letter, too.
What letter?
The letter you wrote to Baron Arnheim when you were Lord Radley's secretary, telling the Baron to buy Suez Canal shares. A letter written 3 days before the government announced its own purchase.
It's not true.
You thought the letter had been destroyed. How foolish of you. It is in my possession.
The affair to which you allude was no more than a speculation. The House of Commons had not yet passed the bill. It might have been rejected.
It was a swindle, Sir Robert. Let us call things by their proper names. And now I am going to sell you that letter. And the price I ask for it is your public support of the Argentine scheme. You made your fortune out of the one canal. You must help me and my friends to make our fortunes out of another.
It is infamous what you propose. Infamous.
Oh, no. This is the game of life as we all have to play it, Sir Robert, sooner or later.
I cannot do what you ask
me. You mean you cannot help doing it? If you refuse...
What then?
You are ruined, that is all. Sooner or later we all have to pay for what we do. You have to pay now.
What you ask is impossible.
Suppose that when I leave this house, I drive down to some newspaper office and give them this scandal and the proofs of it.
I will give you any sum of money you want.
Even you are not rich enough, Sir Robert, to buy back your past. No man is.
I will not do what you ask me. I will not.
You have to. I will be in the ladies' gallery tomorrow night at 11:30. If by that time you have made an announcement to the House in the terms I wish, I shall hand you back your letter. I intend to play quite fairly with you. One should always play fairly when one has the winning cards.
You must let me have time to consider your proposal.
No. You must settle now. I have got to telegraph Vienna tonight.
Oh, my God, what brought you into my life?
Circumstances.
I consent. The report shall be withdrawn. I will arrange for a question to be put to me on the subject.
Thank you. I knew we should come to an amicable agreement. And now you can get my carriage for me, Sir Robert. I see the people coming up from supper. An Englishman always gets so romantic after a meal, and that bores me dreadfully. What a charming house you have, Lady Chiltern. I have spent a delightful evening. It has been so interesting getting to know your husband.
Why did you wish to meet my husband, Mrs. Cheveley?
I wanted to interest him in this Argentine canal scheme, of which I dare say you have heard. And I found him most susceptible. Susceptible to reason, I mean. A rare thing in a man. I converted him in 10 minutes.
Converted?
He is going to make a speech in the House tomorrow night in favour of the idea.
There must be some mistake. That scheme could never have my husband's support.
Oh, I assure you, it's all settled.
What?
I don't regret my tedious journey from Vienna now. It has been a great success. But, of course, for the next 24 hours, the whole thing is a dead secret.
A secret? Between whom?
Between your husband and myself.
Your carriage is here, Mrs. Cheveley.
Thanks. Good evening, Lady Chiltern. Good night, Lord Goring. I am at Claridge's. Don't you think you might leave a card?
If you wish it, Mrs. Cheveley.
Oh, don't be so solemn about it, or I shall be obliged to leave a card on you. In England, I suppose that would hardly be considered en règle. Abroad, we are more civilised. Will you see me down, Sir Robert? Now that we have both the same interests at heart, we shall be great friends, I hope.
What a horrid woman.
You shall go to bed, Miss Mabel.
Lord Goring.
My father told me to go to bed an hour ago. I don't see why I shouldn't give you the same advice. I always pass on good advice. It's the only thing to do with it. It is never of any use to myself.
Lord Goring, I am not going to bed for hours. You can come and sit down, if you like, and talk about anything in the world except the Royal Academy, Mrs. Cheveley, or novels in Scotch dialect. They are not improving subjects. What is this? Someone has dropped a diamond brooch.
Huh?
Quite beautiful, isn't it? I wish it was mine.
I wonder who dropped it.
Oh, it is a beautiful brooch.
It is a handsome bracelet.
It isn't a bracelet, it's a brooch.
It can be used as a bracelet.
Mm-hmm.
May I? Thank you.
What are you doing?
Miss Mabel, I'm going to make a rather strange request to you.
Oh, pray do. I've been waiting for it all the evening.
Don't mention to anybody that I've taken charge of this brooch. Should anyone write and claim it, let me know at once.
That is a strange request.
Well, you see, I gave this brooch to somebody once, years ago.
You did?
Yes.
Oh, then I shall certainly bid you good night. Good night, Gertrude.
Good night, dear. Lord Goring?
Yes?
You saw whom Lady Markby brought here tonight?
Yes. It was an unpleasant surprise. What did she come for?
Apparently to try to lure Robert to uphold some fraudulent scheme in which he is interested.
Oh, she's mistaken her man, hasn't she? It is extraordinary what mistakes clever women make. Good night, Lady Chiltern.
Good night, Lord Goring.
My dear Arthur, you're not going. Do stop a little.
Afraid I can't, thanks. I promised to look in at the Hartlocks. I believe they've got a mauve Hungarian band that plays mauve Hungarian music. See you soon. Goodbye.
Goodbye. How beautiful you look tonight, Gertrude.
Robert, it's not true, is it? You're not going to lend your support to this Argentine speculation, and you couldn't.
Who told you I intended to do so?
Mrs. Cheveley, as she now calls herself. She seemed to taunt me with it. Robert, I know this woman. You don't. We were at school together. She was untruthful, dishonest, and an evil influence on everyone whose trust or friendship she could win. She was sent away for being a thief. Why do you let her influence you?
Mrs. Cheveley may have changed since then. No one should be entirely judged by their past.
One's past is what one is. It is the only way by which people should be judged.
Oh, that is a hard saying, Gertrude.
It is a true saying, Robert. And what did she mean by boasting that she had got you to lend your support to a thing I have heard you described as the most dishonest scheme that there has ever been in political life?
I was mistaken in the view I took.
But you told me yesterday that you had received the report from the commission and that it entirely condemned the whole thing. Robert, are you telling me the whole truth?
Why do you ask me such a question?
Why do you not answer it?
Gertrude, truth is a very complex thing. Sooner or later in political life, one has to compromise. Everyone does.
Compromise? Robert, why do you talk so differently tonight? Why are you so changed?
I am not changed, but circumstances alter things.
Circumstances should never alter principles.
But if I told you...
What?
That it was necessary.
vitally necessary.
It can never be necessary to do what is not honourable.
I have told you it is a question of rational compromise. It is no more than that.
That is all very well for other men, for men who treat life simply as a sordid speculation, but not for you, Robert, not for you. You are different. All your life, you have stood apart from others, to the world. As to myself, you have been an ideal always. You be that ideal still. Don't kill my love for you. Don't kill that.
Oh, Gertrude.
I know that there are men with horrible secrets in their lives, men who have done some shameful thing and who in some critical moment have to pay for it by doing some other act of shame. Don't tell me that you are such as they are. Robert, is there in your life any secret dishonor or disgrace? Well, tell me. Tell me at once, so that...
So that what?
That our lives may drift apart.
Drift apart?
That they may be entirely separate. It would be better for us both.
Gertrude, there is nothing in my past life that you might not know.
Oh, I was sure of it, Robert. I was sure of it. Oh, don't let us ever talk about the subject again. You will write, won't you, to Mrs. Cheveley and tell her that you cannot support this scandalous scheme of hers. If you have given her any promise, you must take it back, that is all.
Must I write and tell her that?
Oh, surely, Robert, write this moment.
But it is so late, it's close on 12.
But she must know at once that she has been mistaken in you. Write that you decline to support this scheme of hers as you hold it to be dishonest. Yes, write that word, dishonest. She knows what that word means.
Very well, my dear.
Robert, I feel tonight that I've saved you from something that might have been a danger to you, from something that might have made men honor you less than they do. I don't think you realize sufficiently, Robert, that you have brought into the political life of our time a nobler atmosphere, a finer attitude towards life. I know it, and for that I love you, Robert.
Love me always, Gertrude. Love me always.
I will love you always. Because you will always be worthy of love. We needs must love the highest when we see it.
My dear Robert, it's a very awkward business, very awkward indeed. You should have told your wife the whole thing. Secrets from other people's wives are a necessary luxury in modern life, but no man should have a secret from his own wife. She invariably finds it out.
Arthur, I couldn't tell my wife. I would have lost the love of the one woman in the world I worship. She would have turned from me in horror.
Lady Chiltern is as perfect as all that.
Nothing could make her alter her views.
Robert, how could you have sold yourself for money?
I did not sell myself for money. I bought success at a great price, that is all.
Yes, you certainly paid a great price for it. But what first made you think of doing such a thing?
Baron Arnheim.
Damn scoundrel.
No. He was a man of most subtle and refined intellect. A man of culture, charm, and distinction.
I prefer a gentlemanly fool any day. Personally, I have a great admiration for stupidity. It is a sort of fellow feeling, I suppose. But how did he do it? Tell me the whole thing.
One night, after dinner at Lord Radley's, the Baron, with that wonderfully fascinating quiet voice of his, expounded to us the most terrible of all philosophies, the philosophy of power. Preached to us the most marvelous of all gospels, the gospel of gold. I think he saw the effect he'd produced on me, for some days afterwards he wrote and asked me to come and see him. I remember so well how, with a strange smile, he led me through his wonderful picture gallery, showed me his tapestries, his enamels, his jewels, and his carved ivories, and then told me that luxury was nothing but a background, a painted scene in a play, and that power, power over other men, power over the world, was the one thing worth having, the one supreme pleasure worth knowing, the one joy one never tired of. and that in our century, only the rich possessed it.
A thoroughly shallow creed.
Wealth has given me enormous power. It gave me at the very outset of my life freedom, and freedom is everything. You have never been poor and never known what ambition is. You cannot understand what a wonderful chance the Baron gave me. When I was going, he said to me that if ever I could give him any private information of real value, he would make me a very rich man. 6 weeks later, certain private documents passed through my hands.
State documents?
Yes.
I had no idea that you, of all men, could have been so weak, Robert, as to yield to such a temptation.
Weak? Weak? Do you really think, Arthur, that it is weakness that yields to temptation? There are terrible temptations that require strength, strength and courage to yield to. To stake all one's life on a single moment, to risk everything on one throw. I had that courage. I sat down the same afternoon and wrote Baron Arnheim the letter this woman now holds. He made 750,000 over the transaction.
And you?
I received from the Baron £110,000.
You were worth more, Robert.
No. That money gave me exactly what I wanted, power over others. I went into the house immediately. Since then, everything that I have touched has turned out a success. Sometimes it has made me almost afraid. Arthur, do you despise me for what I've told you?
I'm very sorry for you, Robert. Very sorry indeed.
I don't say that I suffered any remorse. I didn't. But I have paid conscience money many times. I had a wild hope that I might disarm destiny. The sum Baron Arnheim gave me, I have distributed twice over in public charities since then.
Oh, dear me, what a lot of harm you must have done.
Oh, don't say that, Arthur.
Never mind what I say, Robert. I'm always saying things I shouldn't say. Now, as regards this dreadful business, I will help you in whatever way I can. Of course you know that.
Thank you, Arthur, thank you. But what is to be done? What can be done?
In your case, Robert, a confession would not do. If you made a clean breast of the whole affair, you would never be able to talk morality again. And in England, a man who can't talk morality twice a week to a large, popular, immoral audience is quite over as a serious politician. No, a confession would ruin you.
It would ruin me. The only thing for me to do now is to fight the thing out.
I was waiting for you to say that. It is the only thing to do now. And you must begin by telling your wife the whole story.
That I will not do.
Robert, believe me, you are wrong.
It would kill her love for me. And this woman, this Mrs. Cheveley, how can I defend myself against her? You knew her before, Arthur, apparently.
Yes.
Do you know her well?
So little that I got engaged to be married to her once when I was staying at the Tenbis. The affair lasted for 3 days. Nearly.
Why was it broken off?
Oh, I forget, at least it makes no matter.
Well, I shall send a cipher telegram to the embassy of Vienna to inquire if there is anything known against her.
Mm.
There may be some secret scandal she might be afraid of.
Oh, well, she wore far too much rouge last night and not quite enough clothes. That is always a sign of despair in a woman.
I will fight her to the death, as long as my wife knows nothing.
Oh, fight in any case, in any case. Though I should not fancy Mrs. Cheveley as a woman who would be easily frightened.
Good afternoon, Lord Goring.
Good afternoon, Lady Chiltern. Have you been in the park?
Oh, no. I have just come from the Women's Liberal Association, where, by the way, Robert, your name was received with loud applause. And now I have come in to have my tea. You will wait to have some tea, won't you?
I'll wait for a short time, thanks.
You are not going, Robert?
I have some letters to write, dear.
Oh, you work too hard. You seem never to think of yourself, and you're looking so tired.
It is nothing, dear. Nothing.
Do sit down, Lord Goring.
Ah.
I'm so glad you've called. I want to talk to you about...
Mrs. Cheveley?
Yes. After you left last night, I found out that what she had said was really true. Of course, I made Robert write her a letter at once, withdrawing his promises.
So he gave me to understand.
Robert must be above reproach. He is not like other men. He cannot afford to do what other men do. Don't you agree with me? Why are you looking at me so strangely, Lord Goring?
Lady Chiltern, I have sometimes thought that perhaps you are a little hard in some of your views on life. I think that often you don't make sufficient allowances. In every nature there are elements of weakness. Life cannot be lived without much charity.
And if you are ever in trouble, Lady Chiltern, trust me absolutely. And I will help you in every way I can. If you ever want me, come to me for my assistance, and you shall have it.
Lord Goring, you are talking quite seriously. I don't think I have ever heard you talk seriously before.
You must excuse me, Lady Chiltern. It won't occur again if I can help it.
But I like you to be serious.
Dear Gertrude, don't say such a dreadful thing to Lord Goring. Seriousness would be very unbecoming to him. Good afternoon, Lord Goring. Pray be as trivial as you can.
I should like to, Miss Mabel, but I'm afraid I'm a little out of practice today. And besides, I have to be going now.
Just when I have come in. What dreadful manners you have. I'm sure you were very badly brought up.
Oh, I was.
I wish I had brought you up.
I'm so sorry you didn't.
It is too late now, I suppose.
I am not so sure.
Will you ride tomorrow morning?
Yes, at 10.
Don't forget.
Of course I shall. By the way, Lady Chiltern, there is no list of your guests in the Morning Post of today. It has apparently been crowded out by the County Council or the Lambeth Conference or something equally boring. Could you let me have a list? I have a particular reason for asking you.
Oh, I am sure Mr. Trafford will be able to give you one.
Thanks so much.
Tommy Trafford is the most useful person in London.
And who is the most ornamental?
I am.
How clever of you to guess it. Goodbye, Lady Chiltern. You will remember what I said to you, won't you?
Yes. But I don't know why you said it to me.
I hardly know myself. Goodbye, Miss Mabel. 10 tomorrow.
Sharp.
Quite sharp. But don't bring Mr. Trafford.
Of course I shan't bring Tommy Trafford. Tommy Trafford is in great disgrace.
I am delighted to hear it.
Gertrude, I wish you would speak to Tommy Trafford.
Oh, what has poor Mr. Trafford done this time? Robert says he's the best secretary he's ever had.
Well, Tommy has proposed to me again. Well, Tommy really does nothing but propose to me. He proposed to me last night in the music room, when I was quite unprotected as there was an elaborate trio going on. I didn't dare to make the smallest repartee, I need hardly tell you. If I had, it would have stopped the music at once. Musical people are so absurdly unreasonable. Oh. They always want one to be perfectly dumb at the very moment when one is longing to be absolutely deaf. Then he proposed to me in broad daylight this morning in front of that dreadful statue of Achilles. Really, the things that go on in front of that work of art are quite appalling. The police should interfere.
Oh, Mabel.
I wish, Gertrude, you would speak to him and tell him that once a week is quite often enough to propose to anyone, and that it should always be done in a manner that attracts attention.
Robert thinks very highly of Mr. Trafford. He believes he has a brilliant future before him.
Oh, I wouldn't marry a man with a future before him for anything under the sun.
Oh, Mabel.
I know, dear. You married a man with a future, didn't you? But then Robert was a genius, and you have a noble, self-sacrificing character. You can stand geniuses. I have no character at all, and Robert is the only genius I could ever bear. As a rule, I think they're quite impossible. Geniuses talk so much, don't they? Such a bad habit. And they're always thinking about themselves when I want them to be thinking about me.
Lady Markby, Mrs. Cheveley.
Mrs. Cheveley, it's impossible.
Good afternoon, my dear.
Oh, dear Lady Markby, how nice of you to come and see me. Won't you sit down, Mrs. Cheveley?
Thanks. Isn't this Miss Chiltern? I should so much like to know her.
Mabel, Mrs. Cheveley wishes to know you.
I thought your frock so charming last night, Miss Chiltern. So simple and suitable.
Really? I must tell my dressmaker. It'll be such a surprise to her. Goodbye, Lady Markby.
Going already?
I'm so sorry, but I'm obliged to. I'm just off to rehearsal at Lady Basildon's. I've got to stand on my head in some tableau.
On your head, child? Oh, I hope not. I believe it is most unhealthy.
But it is for an excellent charity, in aid of the undeserving, the only people I'm really interested in.
You are remarkably modern, Mabel. A little too modern, perhaps. Nothing is so dangerous as being too modern. One is apt to grow old-fashioned quite suddenly. Oh, I've known many instances of it.
Ooh, what a dreadful prospect. Goodbye.
Dear Gertrude, we just called to know if Mrs. Cheveley's diamond brooch has been found.
Here?
Yes, I missed it when I got back to Claridge's, and I thought I might possibly have dropped it here.
I have heard nothing about it, but I will ring for the butler and ask.
Oh, pray don't trouble, Lady Chiltern. I dare say I lost it at the opera before we came on here.
What sort of a brooch was it that you lost, Mrs. Cheveley?
A diamond snake brooch with a ruby, a rather large ruby.
A mason.
Milady?
Has a ruby and diamond brooch been found in any of the rooms this morning?
No, m'lady.
It really is of no consequence, Lady Chiltern. I'm so sorry to have put you to any inconvenience.
Oh, it has been no inconvenience. That will do, Mason. You can bring tea.
Yes, m'lady.
Well, I must say, it is most annoying to lose anything. I remember once at Bath, years ago, losing in the pump room an exceedingly handsome cameo bracelet that Sir John had given me. I don't think he has ever given me anything since, I am sorry to say. He has sadly degenerated. Oh, really? This horrid House of Commons quite ruins our husband's force. I think the lower house, by far the greatest blow to a happy married life that there has been since that terrible thing called the higher education of women was invented.
Oh, it is heresy to say that in this house, Lady Marpy. Robert is a great champion of the higher education of women, and so, I am afraid, am I.
The higher education of men is what I should like to see. Men need it so sadly.
They do, dear, but I'm afraid such a scheme would be quite unpractical. I don't think man has much capacity for development. He's got as far as he can, and that's not far, is it? Well, with regard to women, dear Gertrude, you belong to the younger generation, and I'm sure it's all right if you approve of it. In my time, of course, we were taught not to understand anything. That was the old system, and wonderfully interesting it was. I assure you that the amount of things I and my poor sister were taught not to understand was quite extraordinary. But modern woman understands everything, I am told.
Except their husbands. That is the one thing the modern woman never understands.
And a very good thing too, dear, I dare say. It might break up many a happy home if they did. Not yours, I need hardly say, Gertrude. You have married a pattern husband. I wish I could say as much for myself. But since Sir John has taken to attending the debates regularly, which he never used to do in the good old days, his language has become quite impossible.
Oh?
Sir John is a great trial.
Let him.
I trust, Gertrude, that Sir Robert is not like that.
But I am very much interested in politics, Lady Marpy. I love to hear Robert talk about them.
Well, I hope he's not as devoted to blue books as Sir John is. I don't think they can be quite improving reading for anyone.
I have never read a blue book. I prefer books in yellow covers.
Yes, yellow is a gayer colour, is it not? I used to wear yellow a good deal in my early days and would do so now if Sir John were not so painfully personal in his observations. And a man on the question of dress is always ridiculous, is he not?
Oh, no. I think men are the only authorities on dress.
Really, dear? One wouldn't say so from the sort of hats they wear, would one?
Oh.
Tea, husband.
Thank you, Mason. Just here, please.
Thank you, m'lady.
May I give you some tea, Mrs. Cheveley?
Thanks.
Some tea, Lady Marpy.
No, thanks, dear. The fact is, I have promised to go round for 10 minutes to see poor Lady Brancaster, who is in very great trouble.
Oh.
Her daughter, quite a well-brought-up girl, too, has actually become engaged to be married to a curate in Shropshire. It is very sad indeed. I can't understand this modern mania for curates. In my time, we girls saw them, of course, running about the place like rabbits. We never took any notice of them, I need hardly say. But I am told that nowadays country society is quite honeycombed with them. I think it is most irreligious. Yes, and now, Gertrude, if you will allow me, I shall leave Mrs. Cheveley in your charge and call back for her in a quarter of an hour.
Of course. I should like to have a few minutes' conversation with her.
How very kind of you, Lady Chiltern. Believe me, nothing could give me greater pleasure.
No doubt you both have many pleasant reminiscences of your school days to talk over together. Oh, shall I see you at Lady Bonner's tonight, Gertrude? She's discovered a wonderful new genius. He does nothing at all, I believe. That's a great comfort, is it not?
No, Robert and I are dining at home by ourselves tonight, and I don't think I shall go anywhere afterwards. Robert, of course, will have to be in the house.
Dining at home by yourselves? Is that quite prudent? Oh, of course, I forgot. Your husband is an exception. Mine is the general rule, and nothing ages a woman so rapidly as being married to the general rule. Yes.
Wonderful woman, Lady Marpy, isn't she? Talks more and says less than anybody I ever met.
Mrs. Cheveley, I think it is right to tell you quite frankly that had I known who you really were, I should not have invited you to my house last night.
Really? I see that after all these years, you have not changed a bit, Gertrude.
I never change.
Then life has taught you nothing?
It has taught me that a person who has once been guilty of a dishonest and dishonorable action may be guilty of it a second time, and should be shunned.
Would you apply that rule to everyone?
Oh, yes, to everyone, without exception.
Then I am sorry for you, Gertrude, very sorry for you. I don't mind your talking morality a bit. Morality is simply the attitude we adopt towards people whom we personally dislike. You dislike me. I'm quite aware of that. And I have always detested you. And yet I have come here to do you a service.
Like the service you wished to render my husband last night, I suppose. Thank heaven I saved him from that.
It was you who made him write that insolent letter to me. It was you who made him break his promise.
Oh, yes.
Then you must make him keep it.
What?
I give you till tomorrow morning, no more. If you are wise, you will make him do what I tell him.
You are impertinent. What has my husband to do with you, a woman like you?
Oh, in this world, like meets like.
How dare you class my husband with yourself? How dare you threaten him or me? Leave my house.
Your house. A house bought with the price of dishonor. A house everything in which has been paid for by fraud.
Robert!
Ask him what the origin of his fortune is. Get him to tell you how he sold to a stockbroker a cabinet secret. Learn from him to what you owe your position.
It's not true. Robert, it's not true.
Look at him. Can he deny it? Does he dare to?
Go. Go at once. You have done your worst now.
Oh, my worst. I have not finished with you, either of you. I give you both till tomorrow morning at noon. If by then you don't do what I bid you, the whole world shall know the origin of Robert Chilton.
You sold a cabinet secret for money. You built your career on dishonor. Oh, tell me it is not true. Lie to me. Lie to me. Tell me it is not true.
What this woman said is quite true.
Robert.
But Gertrude, you don't realize how I was tempted. Let me tell you the whole thing.
Oh, don't come near me. Don't touch me. You sold yourself for money. You lied to the whole world.
Gertrude.
No, don't touch me. Don't touch me. Your voice wakes memories of words that made me love you. And, oh, how I worshipped you. The world seemed to me to be a finer place because you were in it. And when I think that I made of a man like you my ideal, the ideal of my life...
There was your error. The error all women commit. Why can't you love us, faults and all? Why do you place us on monstrous pedestals? You made a false idol of me, and I hadn't the courage to come down, show you my wounds, tell you my weaknesses. I was afraid that I might lose your love as I have lost it now. And so last night you ruined my life for me.
What?
Yes, ruined it. What that woman asked was nothing compared to what she offered. Oh. I could have killed the sin of my youth, destroyed its record. You prevented me.
Robert.
And now what is there before me but public disgrace, ruin, shame, the mockery of the world, a lonely, dishonored life. A lonely, dishonored death it may be someday. Let women make no more ideals of men. Let them not put them on altars and bow before them, or they may ruin other lives as completely as you. You, whom I have so wildly loved, have ruined mine.
Got my second buttonhole for me, Fitz?
Yes, my lord.
rather distinguished thing, Phipps. I am the only person of the smallest importance in London at present who wears a buttonhole.
Yes, my lord, I have observed that.
You see, Phipps, fashion is what one wears oneself. What is unfashionable is what other people wear.
Yes, my lord.
Just as vulgarity is simply the conduct of other people.
Yes, my lord.
And falsehood is the truth of other people.
Yes, my lord.
Other people are quite dreadful. The only possible society is oneself.
Yes, my lord.
To love oneself is the beginning of a lifelong romance, Phipps.
Yes, my lord.
I don't think I quite like this buttonhole, Phipps.
My lord?
Makes me look a little too old. Makes me almost in the prime of life, eh, Phipps?
I don't observe any alteration in your lordship's appearance.
Well, don't, Phipps?
No, my lord.
I'm not quite sure. For the future, a more trivial buttonhole, Phipps, on Thursday evenings.
I will speak to the florist, my lord.
Do.
She's had a loss in her family lately, which perhaps accounts for the lack of triviality your lordship complains of in the buttonhole.
Extraordinary thing about the lower classes in England, they are always losing their relations.
Yes, my lord, they're extremely fortunate in that respect.
Any letters, Fitz?
Three, my lord.
Ah, I want my cab round in 20 minutes.
Yes, my lord.
Phipps?
My lord?
When did this letter arrive?
It was brought by hand earlier in the evening, just after your lordship went to the club.
That'll do. Lady Chiltern's handwriting. That is rather curious. I thought Robert was to write. Wonder what Lady Chiltern has got to say to me. I want you, I trust you, I'm coming to you, Gertrude. I want you, I trust you, I'm coming to you. So, she has found out everything. Poor woman.
Lord Caversham.
Oh, why will parents always appear at the wrong time? Some extraordinary mistake in nature, I suppose. Delighted to see you, my dear father.
Take my cloak off.
Is it worthwhile, father?
Of course it's worthwhile, sir. Which is the most comfortable chair?
This one, Father. It is a chair I use myself when I have visitors.
Thank you. No draught, I hope, in this room?
No, Father.
Glad to hear it. Can't stand draughts. No draughts at home.
A good many breezes, Father.
Eh? Don't understand what you mean. I want to have a serious conversation with you, sir.
Oh, my dear father, at this hour?
Well, sir, it's only 10 o'clock. I think the hour is an admirable hour.
The fact is, father, that this is not my day for talking seriously.
What do you mean, sir?
During the season, father, I only talk seriously on the first Tuesday in every month from 4 to 7.
Well, make it Tuesday, sir. Make it Tuesday.
But it is after 7, father. And my doctor says I must not have any serious conversation after 7. It makes me talk in my sleep.
Talk in your sleep, sir? What does that matter? You're not married?
No, father, I am not married.
That is what I've come to talk to you about, sir. You have got to get married, and at once.
Really?
Dabby, sir, it's your duty to get married. You can't be always living for pleasure. Every man of position is married nowadays. Bachelors are not fashionable anymore. They're a damaged lot. Too much is known about them. It's high time for you to get married. You're 34 years of age, sir.
Yes, father, but I only admit to 32. 31 and a half when I have a really good buttonhole. This buttonhole is not trivial enough.
I tell you, you're 34, sir. And there is a draught in your room besides, which makes your conduct worse. Why did you tell me there was no draught, sir? I feel a draught, sir. I feel it distinctly.
So do I, father. It is a dreadful draught. I will come and see you tomorrow, father. We can talk over anything you like. Let me help you on with your cloak, father.
No, sir. I called this evening for a definite purpose, and I am going to see through at all costs, to my health or yours. Put down my cloak, sir.
Certainly, father, but let us go into another room. There is a dreadful draught in here.
A dreadful draught, sir. Phipps. Is there a good fire in the smoking room?
Yes, my lord.
Come in there, father. Your sneezes are quite heartrending.
Well, sir, I suppose I have a right to sneeze when I choose.
Quite so, father. I was merely expressing sympathy.
Oh, damn sympathy. There's a great deal too much of that sort of thing going on nowadays.
I quite agree with you, father. If there was less sympathy in the world, there would be less trouble in the world.
That is a paradox, sir. I hate paradoxes.
So do I, father. Everybody one meets is a paradox nowadays. It is a great bore. It makes society so obvious.
That conceited young puppy.
Phipps.
My lord?
There is a lady coming to see me this evening on particular business. Show her into the drawing room when she arrives, you understand?
Yes, my lord.
It is a matter of the gravest importance, Phipps.
I understand, my lord.
No one else is to be admitted under any circumstances.
I understand, my lord.
Ah, that is probably the lady.
Well, sir, am I to wait attendance on you?
At once, father. Do forgive me.
Is Lord Goring not here?
His lordship is engaged at present with Lord Caversham, madam.
How very filial.
His lordship told me to ask you, madam, to be kind enough to wait in the drawing room for him. His lordship will come to you there.
Lord Goring expects me?
Yes, madam. His lordship told me that if a lady called, I was to ask her to wait in the drawing room. Through here, madam. His lordship's directions on the subject were very precise.
Oh, how dreary a bachelor's drawing room always looks. I don't care for that lamp there. It is far too glaring. Light some candles.
Certainly, madam.
I hope the candles have very becoming shades.
We've had no complaints about them, madam, as yet.
I wonder what woman he was waiting for tonight. It will be delightful to catch him. Men always look so silly when they are caught. Oh, what a very uninteresting correspondence he has. Bills and cards, debts and dowages. Who on earth writes to him on pink paper? I know that handwriting. Gertrude Chilton. The Ten Commandments in every stroke of the pen and the moral law all over the page. How I detest that woman. I trust you. I want you. I am coming to you.
The candles in the drawing room are lit, madam, as you directed.
Thank you.
I trust the shades will be to your liking, madam. They're the most becoming we have. They're the same as his lordship uses himself when he is dressing for dinner.
Then I am sure they will be perfectly right.
Thank you, madam.
My dear father, if I am to get married, surely you will allow me to choose a time, place, and person. Particularly the person. That is a matter for me, sir. You would probably make a very poor choice. It is I who should be consulted, not you. There is property at stake. It is not a matter for affection. Affection comes later on in married life.
Yes, in married life, affection comes when people thoroughly dislike each other, father, doesn't it?
Certainly, sir. I mean certainly not, sir. You're talking very foolishly tonight. What I say is that marriage is a matter for common sense.
But women who have common sense are so curiously plain, father, aren't they? Of course, I only speak from hearsay.
No woman, plain or pretty, has any common sense at all, sir. Common sense is the privilege of our sex.
Quite so. And we men are so self-sacrificing that we never use it, do we, father?
I use it, sir. I use nothing else.
So my mother tells me.
It is the secret of your mother's happiness. You are very heartless, sir. Very heartless.
I hope not, father. Arthur. Robert, my dear fellow.
Ah, Chilton. I'm just leaving. Good night to you.
Oh, good night, Lord Caversham.
Good night. Good night.
My dear Arthur, what a piece of good luck. Your servant had just told me you were not at home. How extraordinary.
The fact is, I'm horribly busy tonight, Robert, and I gave orders I wasn't at home to anyone. Even my father had a comparatively cold reception. He complained of a draught the whole time.
Ah, you must be at home to me, Arthur. You are my best friend. Perhaps by tomorrow you will be my only friend.
Oh?
My wife has discovered everything.
Who told her?
Mrs. Cheveley herself.
I see. You have heard nothing from Vienna yet in answer to your wire?
Yes, I got a telegram from the First Secretary at 8 o'clock tonight.
Well?
Nothing is absolutely known against her. On the contrary, she occupies a rather high position in society. It is a sort of open secret that Baron Arnheim left her the greater portion of his immense fortune. Beyond that, I can learn nothing. Mm. Arthur, I am parched with thirst. May I ring for something, some hock and seltzer?
Certainly. Let me.
Thanks. I don't know what to do, Arthur. I don't know what to do. You are my only friend. I can trust you absolutely, can't I?
My dear Robert, of course.
My lord?
Bring some hock and seltzer.
Yes, my lord.
And Phipps.
Yes, my lord.
Will you excuse me for a moment, Robert? I want to give some directions to my servant.
Certainly.
Phipps.
My lord.
When that lady calls, tell her that I'm not expected home this evening. You understand?
The lady has arrived, my lord.
What?
The lady is in that room, my lord.
Next door? Good heavens.
So you told me to show her into that room, my lord.
You did perfectly right.
Thank you, my lord.
Arthur, tell me what I should do. My life seems to have crumbled about me.
Robert, you love your wife, don't you?
I love her more than anything in the world. I used to think ambition the great thing. It is not. Love is the great thing in the world. There is nothing but love, and I love her. But there is a wide gulf between us now.
Has she never in her life done some folly, some indiscretion that she should not forgive you?
My wife, never. She does not know what weakness or temptation is. She stands apart, as good women do, pitiless in her perfection. But I love her, Arthur.
And she loves you, Robert. Why should she not forgive?
There is something more I have to tell you, Arthur.
Hopkins Seltzer, sir.
Ah, thank you.
Is your carriage here, Robert?
No, I walked from the club.
Sir Robert will take my cab, Phipps.
Yes, my lord.
Robert, you don't mind my sending you away.
You must let me stay for 5 minutes. I have made up my mind what I am going to do tonight in the house. The debate on the Argentine Canal is to begin at 11. What is that?
Nothing.
I heard a sound in the next room. Someone has been listening.
No, no, there is no one there.
There is someone. I can see there is a light in the room. Someone has been listening. Arthur, what does this mean?
Robert, you are unnerved. I tell you, there is no one in that room. Sit down.
Do you give me your word that there is no one there?
Yes.
Your word of honor?
Yes.
Let me see for myself.
No, no.
If there is no one there, why should I not look?
I have told you there is no one in that room. That is enough.
It is not enough. I insist on going into that room.
For God's sake, don't. There is someone there. Someone you must not see.
I thought so.
No. Robert, it was for your sake she came here. It was to try and save you. She came.
You are mad. What have I to do with her intrigues with you? Let her remain your mistress.
It is not true, Robert. Before heaven, it is not true.
Let me pass, sir. You have lied enough.
Good evening, Lord Goring.
Mrs. Cheeveley. Great heavens.
May I ask what you were doing in my drawing room?
Merely listening. I have a perfect passion for listening through keyholes.
I am glad you have called. I'm going to give you some good advice.
Oh, pray don't. One should never give a woman anything she can't wear in the evening.
You have come here to sell me Robert Chilton's letter, haven't you?
To offer it to you on conditions.
What is your price for it?
How absurdly English you are. The English think that a checkbook can solve every problem. Why, my dear Arthur, I have much more money than you have, and quite as much as Robert Chilton. Money is not what I want.
What do you want, then, Mrs. Cheeveley?
Why don't you call me Laura?
I don't like the name.
You used to adore it.
Yes, that's why.
Arthur, you loved me once.
Yes.
And you asked me to be your wife.
That was a natural result of my loving you.
And you threw me over because you saw, or said you saw, poor old Lord Mortlake trying to have a violent flirtation with me in the conservatory at Tenby.
I am under the impression that my lawyer settled that matter with you on certain terms, dictated by yourself.
At that time, I was poor. You were very rich.
Quite so. That is why you pretended to love me.
I did love you. And you loved me. I suppose that when a man has once loved a woman, he will do anything for her except continue to love her.
Yes, except that.
I am tired of living abroad. I want to come back to London. I want to have a charming house here. I want to have a salon. When I saw you last night at the Chilterns, I knew you were the only person I had ever cared for, if I ever have cared for anybody, Arthur. And so, on the morning of the day you marry me, I will give you Robert Chilton's letter.
What?
That is my offer. I will give it to you now, if you promise to marry me.
Now?
Tomorrow.
Are you really serious?
Yes, quite serious.
I should make you a very bad husband.
I don't mind bad husbands. I have had two. They amused me immensely.
You mean that you amused yourself immensely, don't you?
Do you think it is quite charming of you to be so rude to a woman in your own house?
In the case of very fascinating women, sex is a challenge, not a defense.
I suppose that is meant for a compliment. My dear Arthur, women are never disarmed by compliments. Men always are. That is the difference between the two sexes.
Women are never disarmed by anything, as far as I know them.
Then you are going to allow your greatest friend, Robert Chiltern, to be ruined, rather than marry someone who really has considerable attractions left. For the privilege of being your wife, I was ready to surrender a great prize, the climax of my diplomatic career. You decline. Very well. If Sir Robert doesn't uphold my Argentine scheme, I expose him.
You mustn't do that. It would be vile, horrible, infamous.
Oh, don't use big words. They mean so little. I must go. Goodbye. Won't you shake hands?
With you? No. You seem to have forgotten that you, who came here tonight to talk of love, went this afternoon to the house of one of the most noble and gentle women in the world to degrade her husband in her eyes, to put poison in her heart and bitterness in her life. For that, there can be no forgiveness.
Arthur, you are unjust to me. I didn't go to taunt Gertrude. I called with Lady Markby simply to ask whether an ornament, a jewel that I had lost somewhere last night, had been found.
A diamond brooch with a ruby?
Yes. How did you know?
Because it is found. In point of fact, I found it myself and stupidly forgot to tell the butler anything about it as I was leaving. This is the brooch, isn't it?
Yes. I'm so glad to get it back. It was a present.
Won't you wear it?
Certainly, if you...
Allow me.
Why do you put it on as a bracelet? I never knew it could be worn as a bracelet.
Really? There.
Ah. But it looks very well on me as a bracelet, doesn't it?
Yes, much better than when I saw it last.
When did you see it last?
Oh, 10 years ago, on Lady Berkshire, from whom you stole it.
What do you mean?
I mean that you stole that ornament from my cousin, Mary Berkshire, to whom I gave it when she was married. Suspicion fell on a servant who was sent away in disgrace. I recognized it last night and determined to say nothing about it until I had found the thief. I have found the thief now.
It is not true.
You know it is true.
I will deny the whole affair from beginning to end. I will say that I have never seen this wretched thing, that it was never in my possession.
You can't get that bracelet off unless you know where the spring is, and I see you don't know where the spring is. It is rather difficult to find.
Oh, you brute. You coward.
Oh, don't use big words. They mean so little.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to ring for my servant. He is an admirable servant. Always comes in the moment one rings for him. When he comes, I will tell him to fetch the police.
The police? What for?
Tomorrow the Berkshires will prosecute you. That is what the police are for.
No, don't do that. I will do anything you want, anything in the world you want.
Give me Robert Chilton's letter.
I have not got it with me. I will give it to you tomorrow.
You are lying. Give it to me at once. At once, Mrs. Cheveley.
You. Very well.
This is it?
Yes.
For so well-dressed a woman, Mrs. Cheveley, you have moments of admirable common sense. I congratulate you.
Please get me a glass of water.
Certainly.
Now.
There you are.
Thank you. Will you help me on with my cloak?
With pleasure.
Thanks. I am never going to try to harm Robert Chiltern again.
Fortunately, you have not the chance, Mrs. Cheveley.
Even if I had the chance, I wouldn't. On the contrary, I am going to render him a great service. I can't bear so upright a gentleman, so honourable an English gentleman, to be so shamefully deceived.
I don't follow you.
The letter you have just burnt, although interesting, lacks a certain simple eloquence of style. Would you not agree, Lord Goring?
What do you mean?
I mean that I'm going to send Robert Chiltern the love letter his wife wrote to you tonight.
Love letter?
I want you, I trust you, I am coming to you, Gertrude.
You wretched woman. Give me back that letter. I'll take it from you by force.
No.
Yes, my lord?
Lord Goring merely rang that you should show me out. Good night, Lord Goring.
You say Sir Robert is not home yet, Mason?
Sir Robert is still at the Foreign Office, my lord.
And Lady Chiltern is not yet down?
Her ladyship has not yet left her room. Miss Chiltern has just come in from riding.
Ah, that is something.
Lord Caversham has been waiting some time in the library for Sir Robert.
Oh.
I told him your lordship was here.
Thank you. Would you kindly tell him I've gone?
I shall do so, my lord.
Really, I don't want to meet my father 3 days running. It is a great deal too much excitement for any son. I hope to goodness he won't come up. Father should be neither seen nor heard. That is the only proper basis for family life.
Well, sir, what are you doing here? Wasting your time as usual, I suppose?
My dear father, when one pays a visit, it is for the purpose of wasting other people's time, not one's own.
Have you been thinking over what I spoke to you about last night?
I have been thinking about nothing else.
Engaged to be married yet?
Not yet. But I hope to be before lunchtime.
You can have till dinner time. It would be of any convenience to you.
Thanks awfully, but I think I'd sooner be engaged before lunch.
I never know when you're serious or not.
Neither do I, Father.
I suppose you've read the Times this morning.
The Times? Certainly not.
Do you mean to say you have not read the leading article on Robert Chiltern's career?
Good heavens. No, what does it say?
What should it say, sir? Everything complimentary, of course. Chiltern's speech last night on this Argentine canal scheme was one of the finest pieces of oratory ever delivered in the House.
And did Chiltern uphold the scheme?
Uphold it, sir? He denounced it roundly, and the whole system of modern political finance. This speech is the turning point in his career. How I wish you would go into Parliament.
Oh, my dear father, only people who look dull ever get into the House of Commons, and only people who are dull ever succeed there. Oh,
why don't you try to do something useful in life?
I'm far too young.
Oh, I hate this affectation of youth, sir. It is a great deal too prevalent nowadays.
But youth isn't an affectation. Youth is an art.
Why don't you propose to that pretty Miss Chiltern?
I am of a very nervous disposition, especially in the morning.
I don't suppose there's the smallest chance of accepting you. You certainly don't deserve her, sir.
My dear father, if we men married the women we deserve, we should have a very bad time of it.
Oh!
Ah!
How do you do, Lord Caversham? I hope Lady Caversham is quite well.
Lady Caversham is as usual, as usual.
Good morning, Miss Mabel.
And Lady Caversham's bonnets, are they at all better?
They've had a serious relapse, I'm sorry to say.
Good morning, Miss Mabel.
Oh, are you here, Lord Goring? Of course, you understand that after your breaking your appointment, I am never going to speak to you again.
Oh, please don't say such a thing. You are the one person in London I really like to have to listen to me.
Lord Goring, I never believe a single word that either you or I say to each other.
You're quite right, my dear, quite right. As far as he's concerned, I mean.
Do you think you could possibly make your son behave a little better occasionally, just as a change?
I regret to say, Miss Chiltern, that I have no influence at all over my son. I wish I had, if I had. I know what I would make him do.
I am afraid that he has one of those terribly weak natures that are not susceptible to influence.
He is very heartless. Very heartless.
It seems to me that I am a little in the way here.
It is very good for you to be in the way and to know what people say of you behind your back.
I don't at all like knowing what people say of me behind my back. It makes me far too conceited.
Oh, after that, my dear, I really must bid you good morning.
Oh, I hope you're not going to leave me all alone with Lord Goring, especially at such an early hour in the day.
I'm afraid I can't take him with me to Downing Street. It is not the Prime Minister's day for seeing the unemployed.
People who don't keep their appointments in the park are horrid.
Detestable.
I'm glad you admit it. But I wish you wouldn't look so pleased about it.
I can't help it. I always look pleased when I'm with you.
Then I suppose it is my duty to remain with you.
Of course it is.
Well, my duty is a thing I never do on principle. It always depresses me, so I'm afraid I must leave you.
Oh, please don't, Miss Mabel. I have something very particular to say to you.
Oh, is it a proposal?
Well, yes, it is. I am bound to say it is.
I am so glad. That makes the second today.
But the second today? What conceited ass has been impertinent enough to dare to propose to you before I had proposed to you?
Tommy Trafford, of course. Tommy. It is one of Tommy's days for proposing. He always proposes on Tuesdays and Thursdays during the season.
You didn't accept him, I hope.
I make it a rule never to accept Tommy. That is why he goes on proposing. Of course, as you didn't turn up this morning, I very nearly said yes. It would have been an excellent lesson both for him and for you if I had. It would have taught you both better manners.
Oh, bother Tommy Trafford. Tommy is a silly little ass. I love you.
I know. And I think you might have mentioned it before. I'm sure I've given you heaps of opportunities.
Mabel, do please be serious.
Ah, that is the sort of thing a man always says to a girl before he has been married to her. He never says it afterwards.
Mabel, I have always told you that I love you. Can't you love me a little in return?
You silly Arthur. If you knew anything about anything, which you don't, you would know that I adore you. Everyone in London knows it except you. It is a public scandal the way I adore you. I've been going about for the last 6 months telling the whole of society that I adore you. I wonder you consent to have anything to say to me. I have no character left at all.
Do you know, I was awfully afraid of being refused.
But you never have been refused yet by anybody, have you, Arthur?
Of course, I'm not nearly good enough for you, Mabel.
Oh, I am so glad, darling. I was afraid you were.
And I'm a little over 30.
Dear, you look weeks younger than that.
How sweet of you to say so. And it is only fair to tell you frankly that I am fearfully extravagant.
But so am I, Arthur, so we're sure to agree. And now I must go and see Gertrude.
Must you really?
Yes.
Then do tell her I want to talk to her particularly. I've been waiting here all the morning to see either her or Robert.
Do you mean to say you didn't come here expressly to propose to me?
No, that was a flash of genius.
Your first.
My last.
I'm delighted to hear it. Now don't stir. I'll be back in 5 minutes. And don't fall into any temptations while I'm away.
Dear Mabel, while you are away, there are none. It makes me horribly dependent on you.
I shall be in the conservatory under the second palm tree on the left.
Second on the left?
Yes, the usual palm tree.
Good morning, dear.
Gertrude.
How pretty you're looking.
How pale you are looking. It is most becoming.
Good morning, Lord Goring.
Lady Chiltern, I have a certain amount of very good news to tell you. Mrs. Cheveley gave me Robert's letter last night and I burned it. Oh. Robert is safe.
Oh, I'm so glad. Oh, what a good friend you are to him. To us.
There is only one person now that could be said to be in any danger.
Well, who is that?
Yourself.
I? In danger? Well, what do you mean?
Yesterday evening you wrote me a letter asking me for my help. You wrote to me as one of your oldest friends. Mrs. Cheveley stole that letter from my room. He puts a certain construction on that letter and proposes to send it to your husband.
But what construction could she put on it? Oh. Oh, not that.
Yes.
And she proposes to send it to my husband. Oh, tell me what happened.
Mrs. Cheveley was shown into my rooms last night without my knowledge. I thought that the person who was waiting to see me was yourself.
Oh.
Robert came in unexpectedly. A chair or something fell in the room adjoining. He forced his way in and discovered her. We had a terrible scene. I still thought the visitor was you. Robert left me in anger. At the end of everything, Mrs. Cheveley got possession of your letter. She had taken it from my bureau. When or how? I don't know.
When did this happen?
At 10:30. And now I propose that we tell Robert the whole thing at once.
You want me to tell Robert that the woman you expected was not Mrs. Cheveley, but myself? That it was I whom you thought was concealed in the room in your house at 10:30 at night? You want me to tell him that?
I think it is better that he should know the exact truth.
Oh, I couldn't.
May I do it?
No.
You are wrong, Lady Chiltern.
No. The letter must be intercepted. But how can I do it? Letters arrive for him every moment of the day. His secretaries open them and hand them to him. I dare not ask the servants to bring me his letters. It would be impossible. Oh, why don't you tell me what to do?
Pray be calm, Lady Chiltern, and answer the questions I'm going to put to you. You said his secretaries open the letters?
Yes.
Who is with him today? Mr. Trafford, isn't it?
No. Mr. Montford, I think.
Your letter was on pink paper. He could recognize it without reading it, couldn't he, by the color?
I suppose so.
Is he at home now?
Yes.
Then I will go and see him myself. Robert is coming upstairs with a letter in his hand. It has reached him already.
Oh, you have saved his life. What have you done with mine?
Oh, my love, is this true?
Robert?
I want you, I trust you, I am coming to you, Gertrude. Is this true? Do you indeed trust me and want me? If so, it was for me to come to you. This letter makes me feel that nothing that the world may do can hurt me now. You want me, Gertrude?
Yes.
You trust me, Gertrude?
Yes.
Oh. Why did you not add you loved me?
Because I loved you.
Gertrude, when Montford passed me your letter, he'd opened it by mistake, I suppose, and I read it. Oh, I did not care what disgrace or punishment was in store for me. I only thought you loved me still.
There is no disgrace in store for you. Mrs. Cheveley has handed the letter to Lord Goring, and he has destroyed it.
But are you sure of this?
Yes. Lord Goring has just told me.
Then I am safe.
Yes.
Oh, for 2 days I have been in terror. Is Arthur still here?
Why, I think he has just gone to the conservatory.
Oh, Gertrude, I am so glad I made that speech last night in the house. So glad. I made it thinking that public disgrace might be the result.
Public honor has been the result.
I think so. I fear so, almost. For although every proof against me is destroyed, I suppose, Gertrude, I suppose I should retire from public life.
Yes. Yes, Robert, you should do that. It is your duty to do that.
Yes. And you would be happy living somewhere alone with me abroad, perhaps, or in the country, away from London, away from public life. You would have no regrets.
None, Robert.
And your ambition for me?
I have none now but that we two may love each other. Oh, let us not talk about ambition.
No. My dear Arthur. Arthur, I have to thank you for what you've done for me. I don't know how I can repay you.
My dear fellow, I'll tell you at once. At the present moment, under the usual palm tree, I mean, in the conservatory...
Lord Caversham.
Oh, that admirable father of mine really makes a habit of turning up at the wrong moment. It is very heartless of him, very heartless indeed.
Good morning, Lady Chiltern. Warmest congratulations to you, Chiltern, on your brilliant speech last night. I've just left the Prime Minister, and you are to have the vacant seat in the Cabinet.
A seat in the Cabinet?
Yes. Here is the Prime Minister's letter.
A seat in the Cabinet.
Certainly. And you well deserve it, too. You have got what we want so much in political life nowadays. High character, high moral tone, high principles. Everything that you have not got, sir, and never will have.
I don't like principles, Father. I prefer prejudices.
I cannot accept this offer, Lord Caversham.
Cannot accept it, sir?
My intention is to retire at once from public life.
Decline a seat in the Cabinet and retire from public life? Never heard such damn nonsense in the whole course of my existence. I beg your pardon, Lady Chiltern. Chiltern, I beg your pardon. Don't grin like that, sir.
No, Father.
Lady Chiltern, you're a sensible woman. The most sensible woman in London. Will you kindly prevent your husband from making such a... from talking such... Will you kindly do that, Lady Chiltern?
I think my husband is right in his determination, Lord Caversham. I approve of it.
You approve it? Good heavens.
I admire him immensely for it.
I have never admired him so much before. You will go and write your letter to the Prime Minister now, won't you? Don't hesitate, Robert.
I suppose I had better write it at once. Such offers are not repeated. I will ask you to excuse us for a moment, Lord Caversham.
What is the matter with this family? Idiocy. Hereditary, I suppose. Wife as well as husband. Very sad indeed. And they're not an old family. Can't understand it. Shan't stay in this house any longer, sir.
No. Well, just go into the conservatory for a moment, Father. Second palm tree to the left, the usual palm tree.
What, sir?
The conservatory. There's someone there I want you to talk to.
What about, sir?
About me, Father.
You? Not a subject on which much eloquence is possible?
No, Father. Perhaps not.
Robert is writing the letter.
Is he?
Yes.
Why are you playing Mrs. Cheeveley's cards?
I don't understand you.
Lady Chiltern, you wrote me a letter last night in which you said you trusted me and wanted my help.
Yes.
Now is the moment when you really want my help. Now is the time when you have got to trust me. You love Robert. Do you want to kill his love for you? What sort of existence will he have if you rob him of the fruits of his ambition, if you close the doors of public life against him?
But it is my husband himself who wishes to retire from public life. He feels it is his duty.
Rather than lose your love, Robert would do anything, wreck his whole career, as he's on the brink of doing now. He's making you a terrible sacrifice. Take my advice, Lady Chiltern, and do not accept so great a sacrifice. Robert has been punished enough.
Oh, we have both been punished. I set him up too high.
Do not, for that reason, set him down now too low.
Gertrude, here is the draft of my letter. Shall I read it to you?
Let me see it.
What are you doing?
I will not spoil your life for you, nor see you spoil it as a sacrifice to me. Lord Goring has convinced me.
Gertrude!
You can forget. And I forgive.
Oh, Gertrude.
Oh, Robert.
Arthur? It seems that I am always to be in your debt.
Oh, dear, no, Robert. Your debt is to Lady Chiltern, not to me.
Tell me what you were going to ask me just now as Lord Caversham came in.
Robert, you are your sister's guardian, and I want your consent to my marriage with her. That is all.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad.
Thank you, Lady Chiltern.
My sister to be your wife.
Yes.
I'm very sorry, but that is quite out of the question.
What?
I cannot have her sacrificed.
Sacrifice?
You cannot bring Mabel the love that she deserves.
What reason have you for saying that?
Do you really require me to tell you?
Certainly I do.
As you choose. When I called on you yesterday evening, I found Mrs. Cheeveley concealed in your rooms. It was between 10 and 11 o'clock at night. I do not wish to say anything more. Your relations with Mrs. Cheeveley have, as I said, nothing whatsoever to do with me. I know you were engaged to be married to her once. The fascination she exercised over you then seems to have returned. You spoke to me last night of her as a woman whom you respected and honored. Well, that may be so. But I cannot give my sister's life into your hands.
I have nothing more to say.
Robert, it was not Mrs. Cheeveley whom Lord Goring expected last night.
Lady Chiltern, not Mrs. Cheeveley. Well, who was it then?
It was your own wife, Robert.
What?
Yesterday afternoon, Lord Goring told me that if ever I was in trouble, I would come to him for help, as our oldest and best friend. Later on, I wrote to him, telling him that I trusted him, that I had need of him. And that I was coming to him for help and advice.
This letter?
Yes. Yes, that letter. I didn't go to Lord Goring's after all. But Mrs. Cheeveley went. She stole my letter and sent it anonymously to you this morning that you should think... Oh, Robert, I cannot tell you what she wished you to think.
Arthur, go to Mabel. You have my best wishes.
I hope she hasn't changed her mind. It's nearly 20 minutes since I saw her last.
Lord Goring, I think your father's conversation much more improving than yours. I'm only going to talk to Lord Caversham in future, and always under the usual palm tree.
Darling.
You don't mean to say, sir, that this charming, clever young lady has been so foolish as to accept you?
Certainly, Father. And Chiltern has been wise enough to accept the seat in the cabinet.
Ah! I'm very glad to hear that, Chiltern. I congratulate you, sir. If the country doesn't go to the dogs or the radicals, we shall have you Prime Minister someday.
Luncheon is on the table, milady.
Thank you, miss.
You'll stop to luncheon, Lord Caversham, won't you?
With pleasure. And I'll drive you down to Downing Street afterwards, Chiltern. You have a great future before you. A great future. Wish I could say the same for you, sir. But your career will have to be entirely domestic.
Yes, Father. I prefer it domestic.
And if you don't make this young lady an ideal husband, I'll cut you off with a shilling.
An ideal husband? Oh, I don't think I should like that. It sounds like something in the next world.
What do you want him to be then, my dear?
Oh, he can be what he chooses. All I want is to be... Oh, a real wife to him.
Upon my word, there's a good deal of common sense in that.
Aren't you coming in, Robert?
Gertrude.
Yes?
Is it love you feel for me? Or is it pity merely?
It is love, Robert. Love and only love. For both of us, a new life is beginning.
In that revival of An Ideal Husband by Oscar Wilde, the part of Sir Robert Chiltern was played by Noel Johnson, and Lady Chiltern by Jane Wenham. Jane Knowles played Mabel Chiltern, Ronald Lewis, Lord Goring, and Rosemary Martin, Mrs. Cheveley. Lord Caversham was played by Ralph Truman, and Lady Markby by Ellen Pollock. Lisa Raine played Mrs. Marchmont, Jill Simcox, Lady Basildon, Richard Griffiths, Mason, and James Thomason, Phipps. An Ideal Husband was produced by David Geary.